Hey everyone, it's Angela Stevens with the podcast Refocus with Angela. I'm so excited about this episode. You're going to be delighted when you hear about what we talk about because everyone is curious about it. But before I go into that, I want to introduce you to our guest today. Her name is Stephanie Solomon. She is a physician assistant and she's been practicing for over 10 years and she is with Onomo Sano Psychiatry. She diagnoses and treats individuals with ADHD. She works with a lot of the mental health areas, and we're going to talk a lot about those areas. But first of all, thank you so much, Stephanie, for joining us today. I graciously appreciate your time.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I'm excited for this talk. I think it's going to be great.
Wonderful. You know, we were talking before the show, and one thing that I've read a lot about is empathy, and I don't think a lot of people understand how important empathy is, especially not only in adults, but also in our children as we raise them. And so I think there's, you know, there's sympathy, right? And there's empathy. So would you mind, first off, to just kind of clarify that for our listeners? Because I think that will help them understand the differences.
Sure, sure. Empathy is basically the ability to understand another person's perspective and like in their reality. And also identifying what other people are feeling as far as their emotions and, you know, what they're going through. And it takes more of like an insight versus sympathy is more showing support like on a superficial level or a surface level, more with just words. So more of like an acknowledgement versus like an understanding. So with sympathy, you know, you may try and show support and say things like, you know, if someone is distressed, you may want to say things like, you know, I'm sorry for your loss, which is, you know, a nice, you know, is nice, but it's kind of, you know, superficial. It doesn't really help them feel supported. And you're kind of you think you're understanding them, but it's more from your own perspective versus from their perspective. Empathy, on the other hand, is more, you know, identifying with the other person's perspective and feelings, even if you don't necessarily agree or, you know, with the situation, but you feel what they're feeling. And it's more of like a deeper connection. And it takes, you know, it takes practice. It's something that, you know, is a skill that over time, you know, takes practice and kind of introspection so that, you know, it's more of an active thing that you would do. So versus sympathy, where it's like more on the surface level, the empathy, you know, can strengthen relationships, builds more trust and, you know, helps people to feel more heard and understood and less judged. So empathy can be really powerful and just really help people feel more supported and less alone. When you sympathize with someone, you may recognize their feelings and show kindness, but you don't necessarily experience their emotions yourself. It's more of a one-way, you know, street versus a two-way street.
Right. And do you think, I have a question about that. Does tone, like the tone of your voice, can that make the difference as well sometimes?
Yeah, because you may say the words, but if your tone or your body language doesn't reflect what you're saying, you know, then people, you know, other people can sense that and they may feel closed off and less, you know, comfortable with, you know, sharing more or but with the empathy, you know, using that specific tone, actively listening, you know, to them and paying attention, they may feel more comfortable and heard.
So for instance, if you were to see somebody and say that they had lost somebody, if you said, you know, I'm so sorry for your loss, that sounds like a certain way, right? But if you say, I'm so sorry about your loss, I didn't know, or something like that, it's a different feel. Did that come across like you would think the difference would be?
Well, sort of. I think, you know, the first one that you said, the former, you know, where it's not as caring sounding, is more like a pity kind of thing, or maybe slightly sympathetic. And so saying, you know, I'm so sorry for your loss, you know, yes, that's sympathy and it's more kind, comes off as more kind, but saying things like, actually trying to feel what they're feeling. So you might want to say like, I can't imagine what you are going through, or, you know, saying that must be so hard for you. I understand how you feel, you know, you're right to be upset, things like that.
That is really, I mean, you hit it on the head right there. That was perfect, because I was trying to think of, you know, how someone would say that. And I think if anyone was listening, they should write those words down that you just said, because even the words that you said came across just really, like, I felt that. So, I mean, that is great. What about, I want to talk a little bit about our children. They know in today's world, if a child has lost a parent or something, sometimes kids cannot be so kind, right? So as parents, what can we teach them to say if there's an example or something? And I know this is a really hard topic because, as I was telling you before, we're really specific and particular about who we ask this question to, because it's so important to me and to our company about how to help people. And so do you have any suggestions for that?
Yeah. So it kind of depends on the age of the kids, because a lot of children, you know, especially young children, don't fully understand emotions yet. They might understand some of the basic, you know, happy, sad, angry, but some of, you know, the more deeper or more nuanced emotions, like feeling frustrated or disappointed, you know, they might not understand. So I think helping our kids, you know, identify other emotions or emotions in general, and, you know, in themselves and in others, is like, would be the first step. So that way they can be more aware of it and start to kind of practice, you know, recognizing those in others. And once, you know, they do recognize that, then they start to, you know, they can start to think about, how would I feel if I was this person, you know? And that, you know, makes it a lot easier for them to understand and to be empathetic. So if they, you know, think like, this was my parent, how would I, you know, honestly, how would I feel? Then it's just a deeper, you know, understanding and connection. And so, you know, they can offer up more of like a supportive, like, I'm with you, not like, not just I understand or I acknowledge, but, you know, I'm with you. I'm, you know, I'm standing with you through this. And, you know, they could say, I'm so sorry, but they don't even have to say sorry. They could just say, you know, I can't imagine that, how hard this must be for you. You know, if there's anything I can do to help you, or, you know, to, you know, I'm here for you, things like that.
I think you're the best friend anybody could have as a child, because you know exactly what to say at those times. And I didn't mean to interrupt you. I was just thinking, if I had a best friend in elementary, I think it would have been you, because kids cannot be so kind, right? And one thing, parents, right, it's better to talk to them than to be silent, right, when they get home.
Yeah. Yeah. And then also, like, teaching our kids about nonverbal cues versus, you know, the verbal or the language. So sometimes, you know, others might say one thing, but then their nonverbal, you know, body language might say another. And so I think part of the empathy is recognizing those nonverbal, you know, actions in others, and then addressing that. Like, so if someone might feel closed off, like they are afraid to, you know, they don't want to share anything, or, you know, but they are clearly, they're upset, or they have like their tears in their eyes, then, you know, you could say, hey, like, are you okay? What's going on? Tell me, you know, talk to me about it. So opening up the conversation for them. So whether it's with our kids or with other people, you know, at work or whatnot, just being observant to the other person's feelings, and then kind of getting perspective on it. And that'll really help, you know, that opening up the conversation for them.
Yeah. And I, you know, again, I think that is so important. And we'll go back to empathy in a minute, but I wanted to ask you a question. What are people, kids all alike, what are they struggling with now?
Kids right now, I think a lot of kids are struggling with, you know, feeling pressure to perform like their peers. And, you know, with social media, I think there's a lot, it's a lot different than it was, you know, many years, 30 years ago, even 30, 40 years ago, because, you know, with TikTok and all these other things, they just see like all these other people maybe doing things that they don't think that they can do. And I think it's probably hurts, you know, self-esteem, and especially with, you know, ADHD becoming more frequently diagnosed and more prevalent, you know, that can affect self-esteem. And, you know, when children are undiagnosed with whether it's ADHD or something else, you know, they just might feel like it might induce, you know, some sadness and anxiety and things like that. So, being there for, you know, our kids and, people in general just will help them feel more comfortable to share like how they're feeling versus keeping it to themselves and struggling, you know, on their own.
Yeah. Yeah. That's interesting. So I know that you diagnose ADHD a lot too, and I've got two questions around that. First of all, with ADHD, when is the time that they should, you know, consider getting their child tested? Like, what are some of the signs or the symptoms to notice? Because sometimes, as you know, a lot of kids are being diagnosed very, very early, and sometimes too early, right? Mm-hmm. So what are things that, you know, we just need to keep an eye out for?
I would say as if the child is, you know, seems to be making an effort, but is still struggling with things, or, you know, they're past like the, you know, the really young toddler age or into their school years, and you know that they're, you know, that they're intelligent or that they can do it, but for whatever reason, they're struggling to do it, or having behavioral problems that don't necessarily, you know, consistently, like in consistent settings, like school and at home, or, you know, and you've tried to help them with it and they just can't verbalize or they can't express why they're having those issues, you know, might be a reason to get evaluated. But, you know, it's tough at that age, and because it, you know, manifests differently in everybody. And so while one child might have, you know, that typical, like, hyperactive, you know, all over the room, getting up out of their seat, presentation, another child might have more of like a quiet, you know, quieter, like introverted, but maybe more trouble with focusing and doing homework. And so it's harder to kind of pinpoint when it can vary so differently. So I guess just, you know, supporting them as much as you can, and then, you know, just letting them know that you're there if they need to talk about things that they're feeling like they're struggling with.
You know, it's interesting because that's with our company, Refocus the Creative Office, you know, all of our products are created through the eyes of a child with ADHD. And that was my turning point mm-hmm. when, you know, I was getting phone calls and emails and just on a daily basis from the teachers. And I was kind of this is years ago, right? When ADHD was not, I mean, it was like, if you gave medication, you know, they were going to be, you know, walking sideways or something. And so it was very controversial back then. My son's 22 now, but I realized he was really struggling. He was, you know, he was making an effort and he was struggling, and I saw it. And then I just started looking through his eyes every day. And so I would say not to, you know, overdo that, but just to kind of keep an eye out and then make, you know, systems that work for them. So do you have any advice, first of all, around that, on things they can do in the morning to make things go better? You have any advice for parents out there?
To make it help with the child?
Uh-huh. Yeah. To make like the day go smoother. And, you know, I know there's a lot of things that we can say. I just didn't know, you know, if you had advised like your patients, any ideas on that?
Yeah. Well, most of my patients, I see adults, 18 and over, so who have ADHD, but also some of them have children who have ADHD. So yeah. I think it's, as far as things that they can do, you know, eating like a well-balanced diet can definitely affect it. Getting good amount of sleep, you know, going to bed at a, you know, decent hour, and minimizing, like technology before bed and stuff, so that they do get a good night's sleep. And then just drinking a lot of water and, trying to stay patient with each other. So, you know, there can be a lot of, you know, yelling and frustration, especially like in the mornings and trying to get out of the house. And, so, you know, setting alarms, and, you know, blocking off schedules for, you know, just making things very specific, so that you have to follow that. And I think things will go more smoothly, you know, with that.
You're spot on, because they model our behavior. Right. I mean, a lot of kids will model our behavior. So if we're yelling, they're going to yell or whatever. You know, it's interesting when, you know, I know you've got kids, but you also specialize working with adults too. And I find that fascinating because, I was diagnosed at age 45 and I thought I was getting early onset dementia. I've been very public about that because I was frightened. And I had menopause at the time with those issues, which made it even more complicated, but, you know, I had ADHD my whole life. It makes total sense now. It's the reason I have three businesses. I can get and go like this all day long and never get tired. My poor husband has a son and a wife with ADHD. So it can be a little crazy. Talk to us a little bit about adults really fast on that. Being diagnosed with ADHD, if you're an adult, what I find is a lot of women, especially now, are realizing, you know, they're struggling, you know, where we were just kind of going in circles before. But as an adult, you know, we know what to look for, but when is it that we think, hey, I might need to be tested for this? Are there any signs like maybe at work or at home?
As an adult? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So as far as what I tell my patients and what I've noticed just kind of as a trend is starting to, you know, once you develop more responsibilities, you know, college, and then afterwards, you know, you get into the workforce, and then if you have kids, it just kind of, everything kind of compounds together. And, you know, so while one of those stressors, like college on its own, can be stressful and overwhelming, you know, a lot of people, they think that however they're feeling is normal and they just kind of manage through it. But then once you get into kind of later on and you have more responsibilities and things just seem impossible, you know, that's when you kind of realize like, I need help. I mean, that's how it went for me. I was diagnosed about 4 years ago. So I was in my mid 30s and I had just had my second child, working full time. And, you know, just getting ready in the morning, getting them out the door was just like insanely, you know, overwhelming. It was a monumental thing. And I just thought to myself, it shouldn't be this hard. You know, this is not normal. So that's, you know, was a sign to me to go get evaluated. But, you know, my focus was affected and everything. Whereas in the past, it was manageable. You know, I just maybe had to work a little bit harder to, you know, to study for exams and things like that. But I feel like, you know, it gets to a point where you're using all the tools, you know, that you've developed, you know, over your life. And what I've noticed in my, you know, a lot of my patients who are, you know, older in their 40s, 50s, whatever, that have made it, you know, they have had success, you know, they have master's degrees and PhDs and stuff, but they get to a point where all these tools that they've developed, you know, to manage up until this point just isn't enough. And I get the, you know, feeling like you have like a dementia of some sort because, you know, the memory loss just feels abnormal. And so I think now that we're learning more and more about ADHD, especially like in women and girls, I think people will start to be getting diagnosed earlier and getting help earlier. But so up until now, you know, there's been a lot of unknown about it. And so I think it will be helpful for the next generation. But yeah, I would say anyone that feels like, you know, life is just, you know, they're trying their best and they're doing everything they can and they're still struggling, you know, then it could be an undiagnosed ADHD and be worth checking out. So,
you know, it's interesting because when people hear, like, I love the mental health field. I'm passionate about what we do here and just about ADHD and just the whole area of trying to help people focus better. But if somebody, you know, when you hear the word psychiatry, right, it kind of, you know, you think, okay, I don't know, you know, how do people come to that point? And I always say the difference, right? And you can correct me if I'm wrong. Psychiatrists, can prescribe medication where psychologists do not. And a lot of people they still don't understand sometimes the differences. What would you say to somebody right now that maybe needs to probably get help for their self and for their family? How would they take that step to go to a psychiatrist?
Well, they can, you know, if they have a primary care doctor, they can talk to them about it and get a referral or see if it's something that they feel that they should get checked out. But, you know, I feel like the stigma around like psychiatry is what deters people a lot. And they feel like once they take that step, like something's wrong with them, or, you know, that's not it. It's a matter of, do you want your life to improve? You know, how much are you struggling and how much distress are you in and what do you want to do about it? So whether it be a psychologist or a therapist to start with, or a psychiatrist to get an evaluation, you know, either one, because sometimes, you know, you may not need medication. So a lot of my patients do, you know, are referred to us by their therapist who they've been seeing for a while. And, you know, they say, my therapist said that, you know, we've been working on things, but it's not improving just with therapy. So medication might be the next step. But even if they're not sure whether to see a psychologist or psychiatrist, you know, they could see a psychiatrist and we can, you know, do an evaluation and then determine the next best step, whether it be therapy or medication. So I think getting past that stigma and realizing that mental illness is way more prevalent than people realize or talk about is a big part of it. So
it is. And I really appreciate you saying that, because I think there's a lot of people that just going and getting over the stigma of going, it will make your life better. And it will make your family's life better too, just talking. And you may not need medication. You may need to see a therapist or something, but it's all good because it's all going to help improve your life. Right. And I think that's the best thing that you said in the last few minutes, is that it will improve your life. And that really caught me. It's interesting. I found, you know, there's always something that goes along with ADHD usually, right? So whether it might be anxiety or depression, and sometimes not. For me, it was always anxiety. And I think my son a little bit the same. But we talked a little bit about empathy earlier in the show. With ADHD and empathy, what I found was having my son learn empathy with ADHD. Adults and children may be totally different. I'm not sure. That's what I'd love to know from you. But is it harder for kids with ADHD to learn empathy? Is it harder for adults with ADHD to learn empathy?
Yeah, I think it is. Whether it's kids and adults, I think it's probably harder for, well, maybe hard for kids in the sense that because of the fact that they may not understand, you know, all the emotions that can occur, but also they themselves are more prone to having strong emotions and more, you know, sensitivity, which on one hand can be helpful because they tend to, you know, have more compassion and, you know, understanding, like as far as wanting to help others. But because of their own, you know, intense emotions and intense feelings, you know, it might be hard for them to put themselves in other people's shoes, right? Or to see other perspective. And then there's also, you know, a lot of people with ADHD might come off to others as like indifferent or apathetic, not because they don't care, but because, you know, the attention issue, obviously, with ADHD and just impulse control and the fact that, you know, they may interrupt people, they may cut people off. And, you know, part of being empathetic is listening, active listening. And mindfulness. And that's something that's very hard for children and adults with ADHD to practice. So while they may have a tendency to be more compassionate, it, you know, might come off or come across as the opposite or, you know, unempathetic. So just kind of working on that mindfulness.
Yeah, it's so true. When you said all of that, it was just coming back to me with my son. It just, you know, interrupting and blurting out things and maybe not at the best time, even driving. If I wanted to turn somewhere else and he was just like, no, you need to turn right. And he would be, you know, it's an intense, when you said intensity, I connect with you on so many levels. So I appreciate that. But well, first of all, I could talk to you all day long. I mean, I, like I said, you have so much to offer and we've learned so much today and I really appreciate your time. But I have one last question for you, because I'm sure every day is not, you're not perfectly focused like the rest of us, and you may be, but when you have those days when you're not, you know, let's say it's just you're not focused, everything's kind of, you know, you're being pulled left and right. And you're trying to really get focused, but you get in your car. What is the music or the song or the genre of the artist that you listen to that gets you game on?
Yeah, I would say I'm a big fan of Dave Matthews Band. So for some reason, this one song always, whenever I'm going to something that like I'm feeling nervous or anxious about or not, you know, I need to like boost my confidence. I kind of feel like it's like my good luck charm song. It's called So Damn Lucky. And it's just a beautiful, like, it's a great song. And the words are really, you know, motivating. And it's just a really, it's a good song. And I just feel like good after I hear it.
Great song. I love that. Thank you so much for sharing those. That was wonderful. Well, perfect. Well, thank you again so much for joining us today. We graciously appreciate your time. We've learned so much today, and we'll have you back on. So thanks so much.
Yeah, thank you.
Today's podcast is sponsored by Refocus, the creative office. If you're looking for focus products, check us out at time2refocus.com. If you are a new customer, you can use the code MC20 to get 20% off your first order. We have password books, calendars, anxiety journals, and more. So check us out. But I've got something really exciting to let you know today. We have one of our customers is Haidao International. And if you have ever struggled with chronic pain. Many of you know I have neurogenic thoracic outlet syndrome and it's nerve pain. And no one knows I have it, but I manage my pain. I don't let my pain manage me. And one of the products that I personally use is Haidao. If you've ever heard of a TENS unit, that they're like pads that go on your skin attached to a device, and it can be tapping, rolling, needling, just all different kinds of different ways to get relief. It's amazing. I found them when I was at a trade show in New York, and I asked them some time ago for a discount for our customers, and they gave us one. I went back to them and said, can you do more? And they did. So I'm so excited to let you know that you're going to get 25% off your order if you use the code. It's so easy. Thank you very much, Haidao. It's time to the number two, refocus. So time to refocus. If you put that in the coupon code, you will get 25% off your order. And also we've got a link that will work and it will go directly to that. But again, if you struggle with chronic pain, just listen to me. Take it from me. I use it every day. If you're looking for a product or a gift for someone that struggles with chronic pain, get this form. It'll be the best thing that they've ever received from you. But no matter what you're going through, don't forget to stop, take a moment, and refocus.